Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, big time birdie fest alert. Sound the alarms at Kapalua. The mullet massacre was on, and an Aussie reigned supreme. Lots of action from Hawaii to cover. Plus, we're tuned into Don't Look Up and a new board game as well from Michael. This week's guest, friend of the show, indeed, actor Johnny Dowers. I met him out in Los Angeles at the Mammoth Media Institute Open, and he is a treat. Plus, our NFL playoff matchups are set. We got some picks, and we always end with food. All of it brought to you by our friends at Club Dr. Golf, the number one golf club care solution. Two great products to keep your club squeaky clean. They've got the polish and the solution. Michael, I've used them both. It's a great way to just kind of unwind when you're getting ready for a round. You know, just clean really clubs, get in your head, you know, just think about what the day to come. It's also a nice way to end your day, too.
It is. And it's nice to see a nice shiny club staring back at you.
That's right. You know, I say everything about clean clubs and how they improve performance and spin and speed and control. That's all great, too. But when you actually just look down at a shiny new club and you know it's yours, I think there's a little bit of pride there. It just gives you a little bit of better attitude towards each shot, in addition to having those clean clubs and grooves that you need. So bring your clubs back to life, restore their original shine with Club Doctor. Like I said, the solution or the polish, two quick portable ways to get your clubs clean. They're doing giveaways on social media all the time, so follow them at Club Doctor Golf, Amazon's choice for golf club polish. Be sure to check out clubdoctorgolf.com and use code COL for 15% off. Again, code COL for 15% off your Club Doctor today.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Breed Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Tosi Snacks, Club Doctor Golf, and Volvic. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, it was an awfully boring weekend at Kapa Luau. There really wasn't much at all to talk about. It was just a bunch of guys out there shooting golf balls, and somebody won. I don't know what happened.
What I'm wondering is, were they even playing on a golf course?
I feel like they're back playing, you know, PGA Tour Tiger Woods on their Nintendo or whatever, and they're just doing birdie after birdie after birdie out there is what it felt like.
We shot those scores in like the 50s, you know, in our college dorm rooms, and these guys were coming pretty damn close in real life. They were going low with the birdie fest. It was a birdie fest galore indeed, scoring records nearly every single day, highlight rounds all week. And all you need to know is that 34 under par won the tournament. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a four-day tournament. This is not a five-day or anything like that. This is a four-day tournament, and 34 under par won the tournament. If you were looking for any sort of carnage or heartbreak or bad bounces, there was none of that. Everything was just tracking toward the hole all week.
I mean, it's almost not fair to the golf course to do this to it. I mean, this was a massacre of that course. This was, if I'm the course managers there.
Yeah, what are we doing? Are we moving the tees back at Kapalua next year?
I think you need to grow the green length so that it's as long as like the first cut of rough, because obviously.
Hey, welcome to the Century Tournament of Champions. Here's some 3 foot tall rough for you. Welcome to Hawaii.
I mean, why not? Let's see what happens. Supposed to be the best guys out there who won over the last year. So why not? Let's make it really weird and crazy.
It was birdies everywhere. JT had a 61. Matt Jones had a 61.
John Rahm had a 61 after losing a ball.
I mean, that is ridiculous. I think Cam Smith, the champion, who ended up shooting 34 under for the week, the Aussie made, I think, three bogeys. I want to say it was like 32 birdies, three eagles or something. The numbers were absolutely ballistic, absurd,
it was
preposterous
crazy
all around. Record set everywhere. I mean, yeah, like I said, we want to move the tees back at Kapalua. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of room on Hawaii to play around with the architecture and move the course around too much. But geez, they're going to have to maybe rethink the layout or something to make this somewhat of a challenge.
I think like what we saw in one of those early rounds with Shot Tracer where Brooks Koepka's ball went into the other island, I think that's what they're going to have to do.
Yes, the 7,629 yard 7-iron is what I dubbed it on Twitter. I'm at Course of Life 1. You're at MWRINC for our daily musings on Twitter. But I saw there was a little bit of a glitch, a chink in the armor for Shot Tracer. But yeah, crazy yardages as well, too. Tons of 400-yard drives. They dominated the course. So nice, easy start to the week for all these 2021 champions. They just get to start off with a birdie fest. Oh, that's cute. You finished 20 under par for the week. How's 15th place sound? That's how crazy the action was.
It's like a Monday cue. Going 20 under par isn't good enough.
Love that. So there were a lot of fireworks and highlights to start off the Tournament of Champions for sure. There'll be another week on Hawaii, which we'll talk about in a little bit. We just talked about what's really not challenging in golf, which we saw last weekend. Let's talk about a story that happened this week regarding the true challenge in golf. We're talking about the U.S. Open.
Yeah, and in particular, we want to talk about the Women's U.S. Open. Big announcements came out this week. First was the raising of the purse size, so they're going to get up to $12 million in purse.
Love that.
Getting them close. You know, this still isn't parity between the men and women, but parity in sport, I think
it's about 80%. Yeah.
And you know, I like to see that they're raising the purse sizes. I think the bigger example of parity to me here, though, is the courses that they announced that now they're going to do. We're going to be at Pebble Beach in 2023. Yes. We're going to be at Erin Hills. We're going to be Riviera, Iverness, Oakmont, Pinehurst, Marion. I mean, they're finally going to these fantastic clubs for the Women's U.S. Open.
Wow, you say Riviera U.S. Women's Open? Okay, mm-hmm. Okay, L.A. I'll see you mm-hmm. there in a few years. That's a great spot for them. That is neat to see. I'm glad that they're getting that equity with the purses. And one cool thing that I think they're bringing back again in the future as well too is the dual U.S. Open. They did it at Pinehurst a few years back where they had the LPGA and the PGA Tour U.S. Open, both on the exact same venue, back-to-back weeks. They're going to recreate that again soon. This is good momentum for women's golf. We've been riding the coattails of the heater that the LPGA has been on in the last year and a half, and this is another awesome step in the right direction that had to be mentioned.
Yeah, you know, I love to see that it's getting the attention it deserves and the courses it deserves. So I can't wait to watch even more of the LPGA this year. And, you know, we'll be talking about it here on this podcast.
Love that. Let's shout out a quick first tee, 9-core value and respect. I want to throw it to Mike Wan with the USGA because he's an LPGA guy that's got former LPGA experience and he's now with the USGA. I know he was part of all this. So shout out to Mike Wan and respect to him for getting women's golf on the equal playing level that it should be with the PGA Tour.
Love it indeed. Let's talk about this weekend's PGA Tour event. The guys stay in Hawaii now for the Sony Open. How can we go that low? Is this going to be the year of the low?
Well, all right. So, hello, Justin Thomas. He's had a 59 at this course. There's been a few recently, I feel like, at the Sony Open, but I remember Justin Thomas's most recently. So yes, you can go low at Wailea. This is where I tell my annual story, Mike, about my Nintendo 64 game that you could only play one course and it was Wailea Country Club. So I know this course like the back of my hand. I love it. Shout out to the trees that are shaped like the letter W on the 16th hole. One of the nicest features on the PGA Tour. So this is a fun venue. Week two in Hawaii. And like you said, this is for the rest of the tour. All those guys who went through the Q School and the Corn Ferry Tour Finals and all that stuff, they're finally getting their first crack at the PGA Tour. Our buddy Dylan Wu is over there in Hawaii getting his first start of the year. And would you believe it, Mike? Pouring rain during the practice rounds at the Sony Open? No, it can't be.
It's Hawaii. It doesn't rain out there. It's sunshine and rainbows all the time.
Well, they were cruising at Kapalua all week. There was no rain to be seen in sight. So hopefully there's no more squalls this week for the friends out there at Wailea. But again, week two of just beautiful, beautiful spectacles. I don't know if you checked the temperatures up in the Northeast where we're originally from, Mike, but it is Arctic cold this week in the Northeast. So definitely time to tune into some Hawaii golf on the Golf Channel,
especially in prime time.
Yes, so. That's right. Nice spot as well, too. Going to be looking at JT on the card. I don't know, maybe throw a dollar on Dylan Wu, but to get my full card of picks and follow picks all year, again, follow at Twitter. I'm at Course of Life 1, and you're at MWRINC.
Let's switch over to Tuned In, where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. I want to share something that we've actually been doing in this house for the last couple weeks now. I think I've said it before. My wife and I play a lot of board games.
Oh yeah,
a lot of tabletop, and we got a new one at Christmas called Codex Naturalis.
Whoa, that sounds intense just by the name.
It sounds intense. This is a really easy game. It's okay. All with some of the most beautiful cards I've ever seen. The artwork in this game is phenomenal. The concept is really easy. It took us really like one play to really figure out what we were doing. And we really have gotten hooked on this game since then. And really have been playing it pretty regularly. And you're able to get one play in maybe about 20 minutes. So if you want to, you know, like spend that. An hour, you could play this game 2-3 times and be good with it. It's going to become one of the permanent games in our rotation now, I think.
Okay, fancy cards it is. Codex Naturalis, like that board game suggestion. I was tuned into a new release actually recently, per suggestion of my wife and everyone out there in the Twitter sphere and the internet. Took in Don't Look Up, which is just a loaded Hollywood cast of a film. Obviously starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Jonah Hill, and a million others that I will not even get to. But it was a great watch. Mirrored a little bit of what's going on in society, you know, where there's a lot of smart people that are telling you that something bad's happening and maybe you should listen to the smarter people. But a lot of people don't decide to listen to the smarter people. And that's essentially the plot in the movie in a nutshell in 10 seconds. The fun spoiler here, which I will give you, Mike, is you know how we love to always end with food on the podcast, right?
Always. Well,
ironically, here's a weird little spoiler. The movie ends with food. In a very interesting way. I'll leave it at that. So it quite literally ends with food, just like our podcast. So Don't Look Up. Good watch. I'm going to go 8 out of 10. I'm an easy movie guy, but enjoyed the concept. Definitely worth a watch.
Love it. Let's get into this week's guest. Alex, we've got another guest from Hollywood that you met during your trip to the Mammoth Media Institute Open. It's actor, writer, musician Johnny Dowers. He's got a ton of connections through decades in acting, even to one of our favorite people in television of all time, George Costanza.
Yes, that's right. Seinfeld fans, buckle in. Fun little story from his time with Jason Alexander. And yeah, Johnny's got a ton of connections from his time in Hollywood. He's been around for a while and had a lot of cool roles. We get into some of his more notable ones. You may have seen the FX series, The Bridge, and there's a lot more to come from Johnny as well, too, including some of his music, which we're going to feature on this episode. So stay tuned for all that coming your way.
But first, want to let you know this interview is brought to you by our friends at Volvic. Performance in color. Volvic has a ball for every swing, and it comes in just phenomenal colors. Yellow, red, orange, whatever you want, they got it. And they've got their great three-piece tour-ready golf ball in the XT Soft. Comes in bright yellow as well and really provides incredible control and distance throughout your game. And you'll be able to do whatever you want with that ball. Even if you're not as good a golfer like I am, I still felt that this ball was pretty great.
Definitely, yeah. And I love using it for practice sessions as well because it stands out on the practice screen. So you know exactly what balls are yours. There's a fun little tip. Yep. Just added a nice little new content piece on Instagram. I'm at Course of Life Alex. I called it the circle of life, Mike. Not the circle of death, the putting drill where you hit the 5-foot putts in a circle. It's the circle of life, and it's presented by our friends at Volvic. So check out how I did in the first go at it. And I'll definitely be trying this at golf venues all over the place to come, but I'm enjoying practicing with the XT Soft for sure.
Yeah, it really is a great ball. And you can check out everything they have at their website, volvic.com. They don't spend their money on marketing to big tour players. They spend it in pack into their golf balls so they can have the best high performance balls in the game. Yes. So head on over to their website. Again, that's volvic.com, performance in color.
Next up on the tee, we've got an actor, writer, musician based in Los Angeles. You may know him from roles in the FX series The Bridge, as well as Anger Management and some other great spots as well, too. Johnny Dowers joining the Course of Life. Johnny, first question for you is, how's the golf game since the last time I saw you on the first tee at DeBell in November?
It is much better. Thanks for having me, Alex. I'll tell you what happens is, you take a little break and then it gets better. That tends to happen with me. So I didn't hit it very well that day that I met you, but I snuck out with my son yesterday. I played a little sunset golf and I was one over the front nine at the Bell.
Okay. There you go. A little bit of momentum. Yeah. It's funny how you can just drop them for a while. And then that first time back, no swing thoughts and the game's never been easier. It's strange how that works. I know you've had golf around pretty long in your life. And from what you told me when we met is that you actually worked at some clubs a lot growing up. What was that experience like for you actually working at courses?
It was awesome. Yeah. My dad introduced me to the game when I was, around 10 years old, if not even younger, but 10s when I really started playing. And my dad took me up to Quirby's, which is a public course in Shreveport, Louisiana, to watch Hal Sutton do a clinic.
Nice.
And it just lit my fire, and so I played golf and junior golf and in high school in Louisiana. And then I walked on at Northwestern State one semester. I was a baseball player too, so that messed with my swing for years because I went from one semester of golf to playing junior college and then college baseball, and then came out of that. But yeah, I moved to Nashville right out of college, traveling in music as a songwriter and a singer. And the best gig in my idea, which tend to work out, was to get jobs at golf courses because then I could play free golf. And I would get a job at a studio so I could get free studio time. So that was the jam for years. And I wound up in the apprentice program and I did the toughest 18 of Nashville one time for a network there where I played the number one hole over at Nashville Golf and Athletic, which is a great course there. So I worked at Legends Club. I worked at the Country Club of Franklin. Good stuff, man. I've played a lot of rounds in the Middle Tennessee area. Love it.
Yeah, there's big time fraternity for all the people who have worked at golf clubs at one point in their life. Definitely coming of age moment. Yeah, nothing better than free golf. You wouldn't believe it, Johnny. Every once in a while, I can convince one of these courses to let me play for free, and there's nothing better in the world. So if you can find a free round, get after it for sure. When you and I met, Johnny, it was the Mammoth Media Institute Open. It was really cool to kind of not only meet Tanner for the first time, I talked with him a while, but everyone in his network and kind of that fraternity of like actors golfing in Los Angeles. Talk to me, is the myth true? Does Hollywood business get done on the course? And kind of what's that experience been like for you as an actor golfing in Los Angeles?
It does. I mean, there it does sometimes. I think it's, to be really honest, I think it's like a lot of things, that whole golden age of just making relationships. It was kind of that way. It worked more so in music for me when I was in Nashville that a lot of deals got made on the golf course. It happens, but I just think the times and the industry have changed so much, that it's not quite as easy to make deals anymore, but there is definitely a close-knit fraternity of entertainers and actors and people that play golf.
What are some of your favorite courses in the Los Angeles area? There's just so many packed in there. When I was driving around that week, I visited. Where do you, I saw you at the Bell, but where else do you get to play?
Gosh, I actually am not the best for being out here 20 years. I've played a good number of clubs, but I've not really, other than like Wilshire Country Club, I've played some really, it's a small track, but I really love Wilshire. I played some great rounds there. I mean, Riviera is incredible. I mean, that, of course, when you get a chance to play Riv, like that's just an incredible track. And I kind of tell people that Wilshire is like a mini Riv, but Wilshire is such a cool little course in Hollywood because all of your lines off the tee are like iconic Hollywood landmarks, and there's such a great history there of membership and Lakeside's really special.
I was going to ask about that. That's kind of sort of a mythical course that maybe doesn't get a lot of chatter outside the Los Angeles area. But when I went there, that course seemed to echo as a special spot throughout the day.
Yeah, I think, you know this as well or better than me. I mean, when you play golf your whole life and you love golf, sometimes, it might not be that the greens are 13 on a stint meter, or it might not be that the fairways are immaculate. It might just be that the vibe that you have, you know, on the course. And I'm a big believer in the Zen and the art of golf, you know, and, yeah. And that golf doesn't need, it's already hard enough. We don't need to make it any harder. And I think the vibe of certain courses. So yeah, Lakeside just, you just feel like, you know, Bob Hope or Johnny Carson, or, you know, Dean Martin's going to come out and challenge you to a putting contest, you know, for a bottle of booze. It's just incredible. The feeling of that course and this, the history's continued there with a lot of George Lopez and you know, a lot of different cats to play there. That's how I kind of how I feel about the desert. It's weird for a guy from the Bayou to have a love affair with the desert, but I love playing out in the desert, out in Palm Springs area in La Quinta, and have spent a lot of time out there. Kind of that same kind of
beautiful scout. Mountainside courses out there.
Yeah, yeah, I played a lot out there at Indian Wells and Mission Hills. I'm fortunate to have a buddy that's caddy at Bighorn and Mission Hills. I love those courses. The quarry is probably the coolest place that I've gotten to witness in the last couple of years.
Yeah, definitely a hotbed for golfers indeed. Johnny Dower is joining us, Course of Life here. I'll pay you a quick compliment before we get into your work. And it's really coming in directly from the host of that event where we met our mutual friend, Tanner Beard. In describing you, Johnny, he said it really simply. He said, Johnny, he just works. He stays busy. So that was to me was the ultimate compliment for you. You know, there's a lot of stories about, you know, what it's like to be out in LA as an actor and maybe have it work or not work. What's been your kind of key to consistency throughout the years in the business?
Gosh, it's very sweet to hear. I think that everybody tends to think we don't work enough, you know, not to sound ungrateful, yeah. But it's just such a, you know, it's any job's hard to get, to have progress at and to continue to work at the highest level. And yeah, I think it's just, when I first got out here, I had a real opportunity to do a master comedy class with Jason Alexander and some other.
Oh man. That. And we're Seinfeld lovers here.
And Jason actually, it was like a handpicked group of people that got to go to the Warner Brothers Ranch and work comedy with them. And, he said something that was just so cool, and a lot of people would probably hear it the wrong way, but he came in there and he said, look, if there's anything else in the world you can do and be remotely happy, leave now, because this is not for you, you know? And he said, if this is all you get up and think about and all that you think you're created to do and you're a storyteller and this is it for you, then stay, because maybe 10 of us that are here today, and I'm including myself, will make a living doing this. Maybe, probably 5. And it was such a great reality check, you know, and such a great understanding that, you know, everybody, you know, has a passion, and you got to really, you're going to hear no a whole lot more than you hear yes, you know. And I think my key is to define success for you, like anything else in life, define success for you, you know. Love what that. Is success for you? Don't let your definition of success be what everybody else tells you it is. You know, a lot of times you don't book a gig, but maybe you're pinned for that gig, as they say, or you're on a veil, as it is with commercials. And you know that that means it came down to you and one other person. And it has to do that they're 6'3" and you're 5'10". They have red hair and you, whatever, you know, it's things that are not in your control, as a lot of things in life. If I go in there and I take my swings and I do the best I can, I do good work, that's all I can do at the end of the day, right? And you just hope sometimes that that good work's going to win out, you know, and you get to work. And so it's very sweet of Tanner. I mean, he's a great guy. And I just try to do my best and bring what I can to a role. I love doing the work. I love the everything from the research of a role to the actual, you know, to the shooting of the role, down to if you have to do ADR because something happened and replace some dialogue. I love going in the studio to do that. So as with any job, I just think you got to love every bit of it, you know, or it's going to be tough for you to get anywhere.
Definitely. I appreciate the notion with the at-bats as well, too. That's a good analogy. And you're right. We only see the yeses on your IMDb. We don't see all the noes. So yeah,
yeah. You don't see the also ran. You don't see the runners up. It is that. There's a numbers game, you know, yeah. And persistence, you know. It's a good friend of mine who does a great director's podcast. If we're plugging podcasts, it's called The Director's Podcast with Jeff T. Thomas. And Jeff's a great director. And he says, you got to have, you, there's three things. You need two of them. It's luck, talent, and persistence. If you have only two of them, you can make it. If you have three of them, you'll be great. Right. So a lot of people that are just lucky and they get that opportunity and they have talent, or they're just persistent. They get lucky, you know. But you got to have two of them, you know. And so I just think, you know, it's my mom used to tell me, you have not because you ask not. So all they can do is say no. So ask the questions, you know.
Nice. Let's talk about the role that a lot of people know you from best, and specifically Detective Tim Cooper on The Bridge, the FX series. It's funny with the timing of the series, Johnny. I grew up in the Northeast, but I'd moved to Texas in 2010. Yeah. And a couple of years out after that was when this show came and really caught my eye, because, you know, growing up in the Northeast and moving to Texas, I didn't really have a grasp of the entire situation with El Paso and Juarez and everything going on at the border. From your perspective going into that show, how much did you know or understand about that entire situation?
It was really interesting because growing up in Southwest Louisiana, Southeast Texas, most of my family was from the Vidor, Beaumont, Texas area over to Shreveport or Lake Charles,
which is a whole different world compared to West Texas.
Very different world. Yeah. So most of the border things I knew were from a different side of the border, so to speak, like a different area and not nearly the El Paso Juarez situation. So I needed to research that. The good old boy Texas thing, obviously not a problem, but the way they see the world, right? But the idea, so I poured myself into that. I went to El Paso PD.
I was going to ask what the research looked like for that.
They have such a great, look, man, it's not just because he hired me. And Elwood Reed is one of the all-time great guys, our showrunner. And he and Meredith Stein, who were co-showrunners, amazing, you know, at what they do. And he just put at our disposal so much reference material of how the Mexican state police were, the cartels were posing as Mexican state police and the way thing, the missing girls of Juarez. And we had one of our writers, because Elwood's a novelist at heart, before he was on TV, one of our writers on the show was a guy who covered for the New York Times and different outlets Juarez. You know, he covered that as a news outlet. So Are you kidding? So the amount of material I was able to look at, and it was frightening. I'm not going to lie. It was mind blowing. The crimes and the things that happened, and to hear Mexican nationals who grew up and loved Juarez, it was like their Constantinople, if you will. You know, it was like really an artsy area, and to hear them talk about what they lost when they lost Juarez, you know, was so crazy. But yeah, it was a lot of materials put at our disposal, and it really made it very easy to do the job, because you just, your heart went out to how hard that situation was. You know, it was a fictional idea that there's a serial killer working on both sides of the border, but the idea of the missing girls of Juarez is a real deal, you know.
Oh, yeah.
The idea of all that is very real. And this show, some would say the reason that they didn't have the viewership in some ways was how dark it was. But I think that's what made the storytelling real. It was very true, you know, to what it is. It's very dark subject matter.
And there's an interesting path that actually got you that show indirectly from other projects that you've had that involves your music too. It's this Sawdust Brothers. We're gonna play some of the music on this episode as well too, so people can get a hint of what you've created musically. But tell me how music kind of helped indirectly get you that role on The Bridge.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So I, you know, was a songwriter in Nashville and always sang, grew up singing in gospel in churches as a kid, and bluegrass gospel, and was in Nashville trying to be a songwriter and trying to get cuts on records. I was a staff songwriter and session singer. And so when I started acting, I was doing a musical comedy show out here in LA with my comedy partner, Garrett Matheny. We had a group called the Johnsons, and we were doing, musical comedy. And I was very blessed to have Billy Connolly take me under his wing and give us some help. And we created a little group, and we wrote a movie called Pickin' and Grinnin'. At that time, all the music reality shows were busting out and becoming a big deal. And a lot of hardcore musicians gave them a hard time, you know, what is this, you know? And so we literally did a movie that was about these brothers that were not very good musicians, but they loved it and they were getting better. And so as you go through the movie, they get better. And we did a movie that we scored and wrote, and we were the lead actors, called Pickin' and Grinnin', based on our comedy act. And these guys from Banning, California, take their 75 Winnebago to compete in Nashville at a reality music show called the Tennessee Singling. And they're going to try to
named.
Yeah, but they're not very good, right? And so we got really fortunate, had a good friend cast it, and we were able to get Kenny Loggins and Billy Gibbons and just some great Sting's daughter, Fuchsia Sumner, just some great people. And, you know, W. Earl Brown, who had become a friend of mine, our kids went to school together and he got Billy Gibbons. So just the way you do it, just getting people. And we made that little movie with some friends of ours, produced it, and Dan Riley and other friends of ours helped put the money together, and his partner Pete and my friend Ben Skirker, and John Grise was a friend of ours, and we hoodwinked John into directing it. You know, we tricked him into directing it, and John agreed to direct it, and so he brought his friends to it, and we just did this little movie that could, so to speak, for very little money. And we jumped in a 75 Winnebago and literally shot in the summer in the Mojave Desert. It was terrible. It was not the way to make a movie, but we did.
I'm sure it was nice and brisk out there, right?
We did it with a lot of love. And through that movie, yeah, John Grise was friends with Elwood Reed, and his daughter, Elwood's daughter, is a good friend of mine, Alaska Reed, amazing songwriter and singer. And they went to see the film. John invited them when it was at the Limley, and they went to see it. And long story long, he called me. I was at the premiere in Nashville, which was funny because we had this little movie with no budget, and we were up against like The Campaign with like Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis, and I'm there with my little handmade poster, you know, of our movie, like in the theater next to The Campaign, trying to get people to see our movie. But Elwood called me and said, "I'm putting a show together for FX," and I saw the movie and I really love it. And you know, it's a big role. I asked John Grise if you could handle it, and he said absolutely. And honestly, I met Meredith Stein and Gerardo Naranjo, who directed the pilot. And from there, it just kind of became they let me build that role from the boots up, which is very, very crazy and unusual. You know, I got to play a little music in the show, and just, yeah, it was a great experience.
Nice mixing it all together. That's a very cool turnabout path to get you to the bridge from your music as well. One thing that's really cool, random IMDb fact that popped up on Johnny Dower's page, performing at the Ryman Auditorium. When did that happen? What was the circumstances for that? That's an iconic venue where just some of the most iconic names in music have performed.
Yeah, I've been really blessed at the Ryman. So when I was in Nashville, my best friend Ryan Murphy, who is Michael Mark Murphy's son and on his own right, Grammy nominated producer and amazing musician, we had a band called Wayne Hall and Murphy. My middle name, my real name is John Wayne Dowers. It's named after John Wayne. And love so in Nashville, I was kind of, I eventually went to Johnny for obvious reasons. But we were doing a thing, and my friend Gary Chapman was hosting a show called Sam's Place at the Ryman, which was Sunday nights. It was mostly gospel. And so we got to play the Ryman with Marty Stewart and several other people. I got to share a mic with Marty, and we got to play Sam's Place a couple of times, which was amazing, our trio. So really, really great experience. And then years later, I went back and did a commercial for the Travel Channel and told them I wanted to do it in the Ryman because they were good to me. And we shot a commercial. Tennessee sounds good to me on the Ryman stage. So, yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Country fans are loving to hear that. That's an iconic venue indeed. Yeah. Johnny Dowers joining us here. Course of Life. It's Johnny Dowers on Instagram as well, too, if you want to follow along. Let's get to a mixed bag right here. Just some quick shot questions. First off, I'll just throw a random one your way. Me and Tanner were talking about your career and whatnot and different opportunities that come up for actors. I'm curious, is there a TV series or something out there right now that you would love to just put yourself on for like a 2 or 3 episode arc? What are you loving right now that you're watching that you would love to be part of?
Man, there's so much. That's a great question. White Lotus, Big Sky, gosh, man, that's still on because some of them, yeah, White Lotus, my friend John
Grouse, cool.
Great turn in there, and Mike White's just killed it with that show, and I love it. God, I know there's more. I'm just drawing a blank. But yeah, I would say that would be great. I'm a big fan of 1883 and Yellowstone, and I've been close on that show. Got friends on the show. Been really close. I would love to do some work on either one of those.
Okay. We'll just keep swinging. Eventually you'll make contact, right?
Yes, sir.
Love it. Let's talk about where you were raised. You mentioned Louisiana. So I got to ask about a little Cajun cuisine. We love to wrap every conversation with a little food talk. So tell me, are there Cajun recreations in Los Angeles at all? Or are there just some things that you can't recreate in Louisiana when it comes to cuisine?
Things that you can't recreate out here.
Yeah.
I would say everything. it sounds like I'm hating on the folks that try out here. Anytime somebody says they have gumbo, and I mean, it sounds like the simplest gumbo.
Right,
and
yeah.
Look, if you can't do beignets and you can't do gumbo, if you can't do beignets, you can't do gumbo. If you can't do gumbo, then you can't do Cajun, you know. So everything that they cook too long, they call blackened, you know. So it's tough. It's tough to get good shrimp out here without paying $100 a pound, you know. So it's just all is tough. I would say there is one place in L.A. Called the Little Jewel of New Orleans, and it is down in Koreatown. And it is a grocery store. You can get Zapp's chips and you can get Louisiana hot sauce, and they fly in the bread for the po' boys. You can get a real catfish shrimp po' boy. They do etouffee. They really do it. And that's
okay.
Probably my best place out here. But yeah, most people just don't know what a roux is, and they can't really make, let alone, you know, anything beyond gumbo. But I'm a big fan of etouffee. My mom used to make sauce piquant. And crawfish and shrimp etouffee, and a big fan of that. Taking that sauce piquant or that etouffee and putting it on a ribeye takes it to the next level.
So yeah, I heard the Cajun when you were talking about that food right there. I heard it in you. It was coming back out. I love that. One of our connections in Austin that we mentioned when we first met, we just got to shout out our mutual contacts. I interviewed Wes from the Bearded Baking Company, and he runs an awesome food truck and makes amazing sandwiches right in the lot. It's Still Austin Whiskey, which I know you've got some connections to. That's a really cool spot. And definitely when next time you're in Austin, we'll have to get a cocktail there.
Yeah. The quick version is Chris Kane over at Still Austin. He used to work with Dulce Vita, and we put Dulce Vita on the bridge. They sold some of their stuff on the FX website.
Nice.
Had actors wear their stuff. And I was pitched the writers a scene where I was drinking at my desk and playing the banjo. And they said, it's El Paso, so it needs to be tequila. And they gave me a choice. And the showrunner kind of nodded at the most beautiful bottle. It was Dulce Vita, and that was Chris's brand. And then I followed him. He went to Still Austin, and we put that in three movies that I've done. And I just love good people. He's great people, and they have a great, from the ground up, as you know, organic situation there. And I love he and Still Austin, and just anytime I can help them, you know, I do, man. Great location. They do great live music down there. There's good people.
You're going to have to go play. I mean, I've seen them do Bourbon and Blues. So I think a live music session's in the works for you for your next visit, right?
We are 100% talking about creating some things together. And while I'm down there, because I've done the tour and I've been there when I came through Austin, and we're definitely got something cooking where we're going to try to do possible Sawdust Brothers, or at least a couple of the brothers and a little Bourbon Blues.
Love that. Let's wrap with our 19th hole question that we ask everyone here on the course of life. You get back in after a long day on the course, you've completed 18 holes. I don't really know how well it went for you, but when you get into the clubhouse, what's your go-to choice for your favorite meal and drink?
It's probably the most lackluster answer you're going to get on this show.
I've gotten about 100 and something answers. So let's see. What is it?
Probably. Yeah, I tend to, it's kind of weird and boring, but I tend to go with a tuna, gosh, man, what is just a,
like an a actual wrap or tuna a melt sandwich. Or something like that.
Yeah. Like a tuna melt with jalapenos. And, I do a little Casamigos and ginger beer with it. So that's usually my go-to, is a tuna melt with the good jalapenos.
That's nice. That might have been the first tuna reference in that answer before. A little spice to that answer, too, just like the Texas that's in you, for sure. Johnny, thank you so much for joining the Course of Life. Really appreciate it. We're going to connect again on the golf course, or if I see you here in Austin, and keep swinging. All right?
Yeah. Hey, quick shout out to the – you gave me the Desert Fox phone cradle, and I got to tell you, man, when I film my TikTok dances on the golf course, it's always using that thing. It's awesome.
It's automatic. It's a must have on the course. Shout out to our friends at Desert Fox. Thank you for hopping on, Johnny. We'll talk again soon.
Well, thank you, Alex.
That interview with Johnny was brought to you by Desert Fox Golf, our friends of the show and the makers of the Phone Caddy. The Phone Caddy lets you strap your phone right onto the side of your golf cart, so it's easy to view and use all day long. No more fumbling around the dark spaces of your golf cart, dropping your phone on the seat, or even worse, onto the grass as you drive away. The Phone Caddy keeps you locked in safely so you can stay locked into your round. It'll be the talk of your foursome and a great gift for any golfer in your life. And for our listeners, you can save 10% off your purchase of a phone caddy with the promo code CourseOfLife. It comes in a range of colors, and you can even show your support with their patriotic line. So head on over to DesertFoxGolf.com to get your phone caddy, and don't forget to use the promo code CourseOfLife to save 10%. Again, that's promo code CourseOfLife at DesertFoxGolf.com.
Sideways across the desert, chasing shadows on the sand. Came here searching for a spirit, chasing secrets in my head.
Great chat there with Johnny Dowers. Great song as well. They're living the proof. And I just love the story from Jason Alexander, him telling you that if you're going to be able to do anything else, go do it because this job sucks.
Yeah. But yeah, besides acting comedy, like if you're not ready for the kitchen, like get out, you know, if you can't take the heat, as the saying goes. That was really cool to hear Johnny recount those stories, and obviously looking forward to more roles to come from him. We'll definitely be connecting when he makes his way to Austin as well. And I'm enjoying the vibes, the Sawdust Brothers, you know, that music Living Proof, it's kind of nice little road trip music, you know, just heading down the highway, not a care in the world, just thinking about thoughts, That's the vibe right there. So love what Johnny's created, and looking forward to seeing him in more roles on all screens coming up soon.
And if you like that conversation with Johnny, plus everything else we do here on this podcast, leave us a rating, punch that subscribe button, share this with a friend. Let them know how great we can sometimes be. And we'll appreciate it. We'll take it as a validation for our efforts. And we need occasional validation.
Whether fake or real, we'll take it all. I appreciate the love from everyone out there. Like, subscribe, comment wherever you are. Appreciate it as always. Mm-hmm. Let's get into some football, because now it's time. We're here, Mike. We've gotten through the record length NFL regular season. The 18-week season has finished, and the NFL playoffs are finally here.
Really? Because the season ended for me in like week, it ended last year. Actually, the season ended last year for me.
It was a quick abandonment by you, and you got it. You did a great job jumping off that bandwagon, because that bandwagon, by the way, ended up careening into a light pole a few hundred yards down the road, and everyone else died that stayed on the bandwagon. And
you know what's even worse is they're going to keep the head coach. They're going to keep the New York Giants, ladies and gentlemen, the New York Giants.
Take a bow. But yeah, there's a little bit of life here in New England. I'm admittedly in a very strange position as the Patriots head into the playoffs. They are kind of exactly where they're seated. They're a 10-7 team. That's the sixth seed. They certainly don't deserve a home playoff game, and they're not going to get one. I mean, I'm in that fun position, which I haven't been in over 20 years, where, you know, it'd be nice to see them make a run. I don't really think it's going to happen, but if it does, I'll be pleasantly surprised. And now I'm realizing, like, what this is truly what the rest of the NFL fan base is like. It's just like wavering in mediocrity, wondering if you're going to be good or bad every week. Just riding the wave of the emotions and looking forward to some sort of playoff football this weekend.
Yeah. You know, there is going to be plenty of games out there, and I'm probably not going to watch any of them because, like I said, season ended.
It did. Your season ended a while ago. I mean, main highlights that you're seeing when you're looking. So the Titans got the bye in the last week of the season, so they don't have to play wild card weekend. Super wild card weekend now. So we got three games. Thoughts on a Monday night wild card, Mike? They just added this year. It's two Saturday, three Sunday games, and a Monday night wild card probably puts the winner of that game on Monday at a big time disadvantage heading into the next weekend. I'm not sure how that's all going to go, but we'll see.
Yeah, you know, whatever. You do what you want.
NFL. They just love. I love how they love. They have no shame in just taking over any day on the calendar. They're not afraid to.
All I can say is I am all in on Tampa Bay here. Repeating.
I was about to get to the NFC. I mean, obviously, we're on the Tom Brady versus Aaron Rodgers crash course. It's gonna be. It'll be in Green Bay again, just like it was last year. And we know how this story goes. Aaron Rodgers comes in with all the hype in the world. I'm sure the Packers are favored. We're just telling you what we're going to say on the podcast in 3 weeks, just so you're not surprised when we do. And we'll be picking the Bucks just like last year, because Aaron Rodgers can't get it done in big moments and Tom Brady can. So that's our outlook for the NFL playoffs. We'll see what comes of fruition. We'll hold our nose. Saturday night, Mike, forecast in Buffalo for Pats Bills, looking like it's going to be about 4 degrees. It's nice. A nice breeze, so that's good.
Snow? Can we get snow?
I hope we get a little lake effect snow, right?
Yeah.
The uglier, the better. So we're hoping for some carnage this weekend.
We will indeed. It's also Monday evening when we're recording this, which means the college football national championship game is happening. Either Georgia or Alabama is going to win. They've won this before, so I don't really care.
Yeah, a yawner end to the college football season, indeed.
Yeah. Indeed. Let's hashtag always end with food.
Yep. Brought to you by our friends at Toasty Snacks, makers of the Toasty Bites. Head to toasty.com/COL for a great, healthy, on-the-go snack. Amazing flavors. And our promo code is COL20. That's COL20 for 20% off. All right. We're 8-9-ish days, at least a week through the January diet. I'm moving along. I'm still going. Good. Sober, no alcohol, and not one piece of bread. That's starting to get tricky. That's always what tends to lose me first, but I'm holding on. It's just been endless amounts of vegetables. My theme music has been just eat a crap ton of vegetables, and you can't go wrong. And so far, I'm off to a good start.
Have you done chickpea pasta yet?
No, I have a gluten-free pasta, but I have not tried a chickpea pasta. Have you tried that?
No, because gluten-free pasta is fucking shit.
It's, I gotta say, it takes some getting used to. I tried it for the first time in a few years. I was like, oh, that, yep, yeah, that's the difference.
No.
Oh,
no.
Okay. Yeah.
No. No. That, what, not
what are
happening.
What are you doing? How are you fending this January? What's going on with you?
I think I'm doing all right. You know, and we actually, we went to, you ever been to a Whole Foods market? Not a Whole Foods market. Wow. A World Market. That's the place I meant to mention.
Yeah. Our friend of the podcast, Brandy Malloy, is their chief ambassador. They do great stuff. Yes. We love World Market.
They unfortunately closed the one here in Savannah, but we can drive an hour up to just outside of Hilton Head and go to one up there. And we were there. I noticed that they had Mike's Hot Honey. So I finally got myself hands on some infamous Mike's Hot Honey and did some grilled chicken this weekend with a little hot honey drizzle on it after it came off. It was fantastic.
That sounds great. I got some honey from a company called Firebee. No free ads, but put that on some cheese and crackers. You can marinate any meat on that. Vegetables. Yeah. Sneaky versatile.
Honey. And they Savannah Bee Company here in Savannah, which is becoming nationally known. A lot of you probably heard about them. They're well worth trying out if you do. They just rolled out a hot honey themselves, so I may have to try them next.
All right, that's your honey report on the Course of Life podcast and Always In With Food. Thank you for everyone for tuning in, and we'll be back next week.